Well, while my presentation is loading, good morning, everyone. Really, really glad to be here with you this morning, not just because of all of you, but due to the fact that just less than 48 hours ago, I was in the wilderness of Mozambique, out on the southeastern side of Africa, there for a workshop. And so this morning, if I seem a little jet lagged, or if you're noticing the symptoms from the malaria drugs, I apologize in advance if I seem a little bit like Phil the Worm. Well, Carol, you got us off to a fantastic start here this morning, and I'd like to amplify some of the themes and some of the points that Carol made. I think this will be a good accompaniment here. You heard the word convergence described as this interaction and interdependence between humans, animals, the environment, and diseases. I'd like to touch on the convergence and talk a little bit about the themes within the convergence, why it's growing, and then second of all, how we might look at new ways to manage this convergence dilemma. I want to start off with a story. One of the colleagues we've met over the last year is a guy named Howard Wong. Howard works for the health department in Hong Kong. That's not Howard in the photograph. One of the hats that he wears is patrolling live animal markets to look at disease problems, or problems that could stimulate disease or transmit disease. And he tells us that it's a common practice in Hong Kong and other parts of Asia to purchase a live bird or a freshly slaughtered bird with the idea that it tastes better than one that's been processed. Howard's concern is that when you have live animals from different farms mixing, interacting within these live markets, it creates opportunities for disease transmission between animals and then to humans as well. Howard tells us of kind of a cultural conflict there. A health official might offer a farmer $5 to slaughter a bird before he brings it to market. The problem occurs when that promise is not fulfilled, or when the health official pockets $3 of the $5 for himself, or if the farmer knows that he can get more than $5 on the market and tries to sneak the bird in. Now, some of you might be saying, well, so what? That's Hong Kong. That's not in my backyard, as we say. But what I'd like to convey is that whether you work in animal health, human health, agricultural production and distribution, environmental health, these types of scenarios affect us all. In 2004, there was an outbreak of SARS among poultry in that part of the world. It moved between the animals, it moved to humans, and the humans moved. Hong Kong, China, Singapore, Canada, and not only did this have impacts upon human health, on animal health, but also economic impacts estimated at up to $50 billion. We, the animals on which we depend, the environment, and the diseases that we encounter along the way are part of this system. And I'd like to share six different themes today that hopefully will convey some understanding of the systems in which we operate, that we're creating, and that we're sustaining. The first of these is population and disease, and something that Carol touched on a little bit earlier. We're at 6.6 billion humans on the planet, estimated to be at 9 billion by 2050. At the same time, as you know, there are 21 billion food animals produced every year. This growth in humans, the number of animals, amplifies opportunities for the transmission of diseases. We believe that about 60% of emerging infectious diseases can go between animal species, and as Carol shared, up to 75% of the infectious diseases that we have as humans may originate within the animal population. Proximity between the species is a key, and so we're starting to look at urbanization. Right now, less than half of us live in cities or urban areas, but it's believed that by 2030, about 60% of us will be in urban areas. You heard Carol use the word peri-urban settlements. These are illegal or informal settlements that kind of crop up around city centers. It's believed that up to 50% of the people living in Latin America, Africa, and parts of Asia are already a part of these systems. They're bringing their animals with them, and animal production operations are moving closer, reducing transportation costs, being closer to consumers. So ultimately, what we end up creating is a system that feeds into what we call the great biological mixing bowl, where all of these elements are interacting, interdepending, and converging. One of the second themes that's driving this is economics. We see increases in personal income in places such as China, Russia, and India. And it's believed that as income goes from $1 to $2 per day, one of the greatest expenditures is on protein. We believe that there will be a 50% increase in protein consumption between now and 2020, especially in developing countries where this type of growth in animal production may be challenging to support. The average Chinese consumer who ate 20 kilograms of meat in 1985, it's believed that he or she will eat 50 kilograms of meat this year. So some of the conclusions we draw from this is that there's increasing pressure on developing nations to produce more food and to do so cheaply. There's an increasing prevalence of systems that move goods, people, animals, animal products, and diseases farther and faster than ever before. And increasingly, this idea of nations and states that might regulate a lot of this are being replaced by corporations and the flow of resources. It feeds very nicely into our third theme, and that is environment. Over the past 50 years, it's believed that humans have changed the environment more rapidly and more extensively than at any other point in time. One area is encroachment, and as we expand our animal production systems, as we expand our transportation, as we expand distribution, sometimes we're willing to overlook or fail to see the environmental consequences. Encroachment is an example. We're witnessing the emergence of new biological threats due to humankind's encroachment into animal habitats. In 1998, we saw the emergence of what's called the Nipah virus, spelled N-I-P-A-H. This occurred in Malaysia, and it quickly spread to pigs that were being grown in Malaysia, and then to the farmers as well. It's believed that as farmers expanded their pig production operations out into jungles and other areas, it intruded upon the habitat of fruit bats or flying foxes. If you've never seen one of these, they're big animals with at least a 4 to 6 foot wingspan. As you might guess from the name, they live in trees, they eat fruit. And as the fruit and partially eaten fruit and waste fell from the trees, it infected the pigs and passed along to the farmers. 256 farmers died, more than 1 million pigs had to be slaughtered, and then the virus spread to Bangladesh, to India, as infected pigs were exported to those countries as well. This gives us an example of this kind of convergence and how environment, how humankind, plays a role. The second of these areas is climate change. About 2 weeks ago, the Wildlife Conservation Society released a document called The Deadly Dozen. And this looks at 12 different pathogens that they believe will expand and grow in the systems we've created, things such as HIV, such as avian flu. It's based on the idea that climates in northern parts of our world are becoming warmer. And so the animals, the insects, the microbes are better able to survive and better able to move into those environments as well. The third aspect to this is resource use, and I want to look just at fresh water as an example. It's believed that over the last 50 years, fresh water supplies have decreased by 60%. If you're someone who works in agriculture, you can see this impact, whether you're working in wheat, in rice, or in animal production. We know around the world, human health is affected dramatically by a lack of healthy water. I'm pleased to see that that's kind of the theme for next year's APHA meeting. We also know that this can increase the potential for infectious disease. And ultimately, I look at this as Father Prophet winning the battle against Mother Nature. The fourth of these themes is what we call implosions of safety nets. And kind of like our influence upon the environment, this is the premise that the systems that we are creating, that we sustain, amplify opportunities for disease transmission. By 2025, animal production is expected to increase by 50% in developing countries, places where, from a health perspective, they might least be able to support this type of growth. The top poultry-producing region in the world is Asia, a place where we have high densities of people, high densities of animal, all living together in the same place. China has roughly the same land mass as the U.S., but 4.5 times the population. Sadly, when we look at the developing world, we're seeing investments there that may be made more along the lines of keeping a country or an organization competitive versus producing a product safely or making it safe for people to participate in that production. In many places, there are very available labor pools at low cost with low penalties when problems do occur. The fifth of these themes is what we call the growing governance gap. The idea here is that governments, looking at governments and what they ought to do versus what they're actually doing or what they should be doing. When we look at government expenditures on agriculture, just within the Americas, we see 5% of all expenditures go to agriculture, and then just 5 to 10% on average go to animal and plant health. When avian influenza first came onto the world stage, our President Bush requested $7.1 billion, yet just 2% of this went toward animal health. We find that sometimes governments and decision makers are saying the right things, but may be unaware of the need for sustainable, long-term systems and infrastructures from scientific, from economic, from social and ethical perspectives. The sixth and final theme here is technology. And I like the phrase that the threats we face have come from our own progress in science and technology. We have transportation networks that are moving people, animals, diseases, microbes farther and faster than ever before. Last year alone, there were 900 million international travelers around the world. I'm proof that you can go from jungles in Africa to Atlanta just in a matter of hours. A global outbreak of avian influenza would capitalize on things such as the transportation networks we've created. Another aspect or downside of technology is counterfeiting. What I mean by counterfeiting is that these are mislabeled products where an expiration date has been changed, or a low quality product has been relabeled to give the perception of being of a higher quality. These are also products where ingredients have been substituted. Think of melamine, for example, in food products or pet food. It's believed that up to 10% of all global trade is in the counterfeit market. If we look just at food, it's believed that up to 10% of all food in some countries and some places such as the United Kingdom are counterfeit. For those of you who work in human health and work in medicine, of all the counterfeit pharmaceuticals seized by the United States last year, 43% contained no active ingredient. So technology, as much as it's brought many benefits to us, can also create challenges as well. Let's look at this from a positive side as well. We're able to better share health-related information, better able to monitor and manage disease through technology. 2007 saw an all-time high in terms of internet access around the world. 1.6 billion people can now go online. But mobile phones are outpacing that. 2.2 billion people around the world, or about a third of us, have access to a mobile phone. I was pleased to see as I traveled throughout Africa the last 10 days, the outcroppings of little places where people can buy a mobile phone or buy airtime or buy a little card where you scratch off a code number, input it into your phone, and it gives you an extra 10 minutes of calling time. In places like Mozambique, mobile phones are being used to monitor counterfeit malaria drugs and monitor the distribution of counterfeit and valid vaccines. In Africa, mobile subscribers have increased by 1,600% since 2000. So technology is becoming a very useful tool, but I caution if it's applied correctly in local contexts. Well, these six themes that I've addressed so far create what Carol described earlier as this perfect storms type of scenario. Negative in many ways for humans and animals, positive for the microbes. If we look at a perfect storm just from a meteorological perspective, it's the idea that you have this rare combination of conditions that might occur once a century, say like a Hurricane Katrina. If we look at a convergence perfect storm, we're starting to believe that the conditions that are a part of the convergence are creating the emergence of infectious diseases, and that a perfect storm like the one you see here on the screen might be more of a new type of normal rather than a rare occurrence. Well, I believe in this world of collapsed spaces, of interconnectivity, that we need to take a systemic view of what we're creating, what we've inherited, and what we're sustaining. I believe that we have a tendency sometimes to establish quick solutions and declare things mission accomplished. But I argue that the problems we face in the convergence are dilemmas. They're of a complexity that defy these silver bullet type of solutions, that we need to think long term, and we need to think in multidisciplinary terms. We need to move from this idea of problems and solutions to dilemmas and management. Well, I've spent the last 8 days on a place called Mozambique Island, out in the middle of the ocean, connected by a one-lane bridge to the mainland. Mozambique Island is less than 1 mile long. It's about 500 meters wide, and it's home to 14,000 people and lots of animals. Most of the people there lived in thatched roof huts or crumbling stone buildings. The majority of them have no working plumbing, so when the need arises, that's what the beach is for. People there survive based on what they catch in the ocean, whatever fruits or vegetables or other food products come across that one-lane bridge to the mainland, or they survive based on the animals that they have in their own homes and their own backyards. We've got a lack of sanitary conditions on Mozambique Island, growing populations of humans and animals, a lack of fresh water that has to be trucked in as well, and no working hospital. In my mind, Mozambique Island sets up this convergence type of perfect storm all too well. And I believe that there are no quick fixes for situations like that. One of the phrases that I picked up there is that we must be all ears to learn. I believe that we don't and cannot learn simply by doing. We need to be exposed to other worldviews and then act differently than we have in the past. I think you would agree, having looked at some of these themes, that we're in an era defined by the need for better sustainability. But what does better really mean? It can be contextual and it can be subjective. I believe, therefore, we must converse, engage, and agree on what better is, especially before it's imposed on us by others. This process requires social and critical engagement and being open to other worldviews. This engagement can also provide context. And as I indicated earlier, I believe that too often we start solving problems without really understanding them. Too often we break down systems into their simpler parts and then try to reassemble them. Doing so prevents us from seeing these dilemmas from a holistic view. You've heard the phrase, it's the economy, stupid. Well, I don't believe it's necessarily that simple, or that corporate bailouts are necessarily that simple either. The contexts in which we operate are very complex, especially this convergence. They're complex because when we change one part of a system, it affects other interactions within that system. The use of pesticides, for example, may be great for farmers, but if they pollute the rivers and if they kill fish, it's not so good for the fishing industry. Here's where it gets even trickier. Operating in context means applying morality and ethically based judgment. It's not just about money, science, and technology. Climate change, food for fuel, are those types of issues. When we look at zoonoses and this convergent subject, I believe that we commit an oversight and an injustice to those who are most susceptible to these diseases, and our belief that this is simply a zoonotic phenomenon that's best left to those types of disciplines. When we define dilemmas, one of our responses is to look to the past, but I'm not sure we do such a good job of learning from history. And therefore, if we can't learn from history, how do we learn from the future? One of the tools that we've used is scenario planning. In meetings held last week in Mozambique, in meetings in Costa Rica earlier this year, when several of us here met in Salzburg last fall, and then at other meetings that we've had here in the United States. One of our colleagues is Mark Woolhouse. He works for the United Kingdom, and he's what I call a disease futurist. He's looked into the future and believes that many of the emerging infectious diseases that we have now will still be with us if we continue to sustain the systems that we have in place. I know that no one can predict the future, but I think if we went around the room here and asked what life might be like in 2038, at least one of us would have an idea that could be right. So the question is not what must we do to get it right, because it's impossible, I believe, to get the future right, but the question is, more importantly, what must we do to not get it wrong? The next 20 years, we're going to experience massive change. We have a changing human population poised to outpace food production and fresh water availability. We have many other issues, and issues that have drawn you to this conference, from HIV, drug-resistant tuberculosis. We're also seeing on a world stage the rise of China, other economies. We're seeing an aging Japan. One of the questions that I consider here in the US is if we'll continue as a colonial power or if we're one of the fastest growing undeveloping countries. As we look at this convergence theme, an even greater issue is our interaction between us and the environment. So I want to conclude here with three challenges, one opportunity. First is a challenge that we take a systemic approach towards managing the systems that we've created, that we're inheriting, and that we're sustaining. This is different than talking about strategic plans and missions. While I think those things are valuable, sometimes we get lost in the idea of what we actually want to transform and how they're part of a much larger system. The second challenge is to operate with a spirit of critical engagement and interaction that goes beyond our own disciplines and beyond our own worldviews. And then third is to observe differently, think differently, plan differently, and act differently than we have before. Now, doing things differently and being different may be the goal, but sometimes that can create discomfort. One of my supervisors at Michigan State has a mug that says, "Well-behaved women rarely make history." Love that phrase. And it's this necessary lack of behavior that can make many in positions of power feel a little uneasy. The emperor doesn't want to hear that he's not wearing any clothes. Three challenges, now one opportunity. When you came in, there were materials by the front door produced by our project, Local Action Global Health. It describes this convergence and talks about the different products, projects, concepts, and ideas that are a part of this convergence. You'll see listed there our URL, and you see it here on the screen as well. At that website, you'll find videos, other resources, information about the processes that we're using that you can use as learning tools and teaching tools. If you don't want to download the videos, I have 5 CDs here with the videos already on them. So let's talk afterwards. Give me some feedback, and I will be sure that you get a CD as well. Thanks for your attention. Thanks for your time, and I look forward to spending the day with you here.